House will come to order. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is February the 3rd, 2015. This is the 16th day of the session. Pending deadlines and announcements, today, upon adjournment, we will have a meeting of all committee chairmen in room 302 with me. Our next deadline is Friday, February 6th. This Friday is the last day for bills to be reported out of committee in the House of Origin. Now, I did a little math last night. We have, it's kind of hard to tell because I don't know how the committees are going to deal with some of these bills. We have roughly 100 bills. And with the schedule that the majority floor leader emailed out that you should all have, we have 33 hours to deal with 100 bills. That comes out to 19.8 minutes per bill. And I think 20 minutes is probably a good round number. So if debate on a bill runs over 20 minutes, you're cutting into debate on another bill, and to the extent they all run over 20 minutes, then as our former speaker used to say, that screaming you hear in the background is bills dying on general file. I think if we use a little discipline and we don't saw sawdust and we only say what needs to be said and not what we need maybe to say for our own self-aggrandizement, I think we can get through this and get them all up, which would be gratifying for everyone. So keep that in mind as we enter into these debates on various things, especially the ones that involve principles. The clerk will call the roll.
Allen, Baker, here. Baldwin, here. Barlow, here. Berger, here. Blackburn, here. Blake, here. Burkhart, Burkhart excused, Bird, here. Campbell, here. Kennedy, here. Clem, here. Connolly, excuse. Connolly excused, Dayton, here. Edmonds, Edwards, here. Eklund, here. Esquivel, here. Freeman, here. Gay, here. Greer, excuse. Greer excused, Halverson, Halverson, excuse. Halverson excused, Harshman, excuse. Harshman excused, Harvey, here. Hunt, here. Yagi, here. Jennings, here. Jennings, Kasparik, Kirkbride, here. Croker, here. Crone, here. Larson Lloyd, Larson Dan, here. Lindholm, here. Lockhart, here. Laux, here. Madden, here. McKim, here. Miller, excuse. Miller excused, Moniz, Moniz excused, Nicholas, excuse. Nicholas excused, Northrup, here. Patton, here. Paxton, here. Pelkey, here. Pelkey, here. Petrov, Piperinen, Pinnell, Reeder, Schwartz, here. Summers, here. Steinmetz, here. Stubson, excuse. Stubson excused, Throne, here. Walters, here. Wilson, Wilson, here. Winters, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, here. Mr. Speaker, here. 51 present, Miller, here. Miller present, Halverson present. Okay. 53 present, 7 excused.
The prayer for the day is offered by Pastor Ernest Fitzhugh, representing Unity Missionary Baptist Church.
Good morning. Let us bow. Dear Heavenly Father, we come once again just to thank you for this day. This is the day that thou hast made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. As these men and these women come together to formulate plans that will help our communities and our state, ask that you give them free reign, give them, O God, what they need, touch their minds, touch their hearts. Bless our families near and far. Keep us all in your keeping care. We come to acknowledge, O God, the strength that you give us, the forgiveness that you give us. We come to acknowledge that you are God all by yourself. And that we ask, O God, that you will strengthen these men and these women, that they will do the things that brings glory and honor to your name, as they formulate plans to help us to live in a better way, in a better light. Now we thank you for this day. Help us to do those things that give glory to your name. In Jesus' name I do pray. Amen.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please proceed.
Members of the 63rd, we're honored today to have the family of Harriet Elizabeth Liz Bird here so they can listen while we present the memorial honoring her. I will quickly introduce the family, and Representative Bird's going to help me if I get it wrong. We have Dr. Robert Bird and his wife, Lori, Dolores Biggs, Liz's sister, David Bird, nephew, cousin, Sierra Bird, granddaughter, Liz Bird Shea, daughter, David Shea, and Adrian Benton. And we're happy to have them here on this special day. And now I'd like to present the memorial. The 63rd Legislature of the State of Wyoming honors the memory of Harriet Elizabeth Liz Bird. A joint memorial providing for the recognition of the Honorable Harriet Liz Bird from Cheyenne, who so capably represented the people of Laramie County in the Wyoming Legislature, expressing deep appreciation for her dedicated and distinguished service to her community and state, and further expressing the depth of our sorrow to her family on behalf of the residents of Wyoming. Be it resolved by the 63rd Legislature of the State of Wyoming, whereas this proud resident of Cheyenne, Wyoming, was born on April 20th, 1926, into the Roan family, who played a large part in establishing the state of Wyoming. And whereas Harriet's grandfather was a prominent cowboy and railroader and encouraged Liz to educate herself as a means of survival. And whereas Liz was a fourth-generation native of Wyoming who graduated from Cheyenne High School in 1944 and later went on to West Virginia State College to pursue her dream of becoming an elementary school teacher. And whereas Mrs. Bird returned back to Cheyenne upon graduating college, but was denied a teaching job at the Laramie County School District, due in large part to her minority status, even though she was one of only a few applicants to hold a college degree. And whereas Harriet eventually found a teaching job at Fort F.E. Warren Air Force Base, and in 1976 went back to school to earn a master's degree in elementary education from the University of Wyoming. And whereas, after 37 years of teaching in Cheyenne, Liz made the decision to run for the Wyoming Legislature with the help and support of her father, and became the first African-American woman to serve in the state legislature when she was elected to the House of Representatives in 1981. And whereas Liz served in the Wyoming House of Representatives until 1988 and then was elected to the Wyoming Senate, where she served until 1992. And whereas Mrs. Bird will be remembered for legislation passed in 1990, which established the third Monday in January as a state holiday for Martin Luther King Jr. Day and Wyoming Equality Day. And whereas she played an important role in getting legislation passed related to handicapped parking, creating social services for adults, and enforcing the use of child safety restraints for Wyoming citizens. And whereas the Wyoming Legislature recognizes Harriet Liz Bird, her three children, including current Representative Jim Bird, and her eight grandchildren, and express our deepest appreciation for her service to the people of Wyoming. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the members of the Legislature of the State of Wyoming, Section 1, that on behalf of the people of the State of Wyoming, we express our gratitude to Liz Bird for a lifetime of dedicated service to the State of Wyoming. Section 2, that Liz Bird will be remembered for her deep and abiding love for the State of Wyoming and her commitment to the people of Laramie County, through her unwavering dedication to community spirit and public service, which was demonstrated by her selfless dedication to the people of Wyoming through her service in the Wyoming legislature. Be it further resolved that this memorial be transmitted to the family of Harriet Liz Byrd as an expression of best wishes from the Wyoming legislature. Signed on the second day of February, 2015, Senator Phil Nicholas, President of the Wyoming Senate, Representative Kermit Brown, Speaker of the Wyoming House of Representatives.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Representative Byrd, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, friends, I'd like to thank every one of you. It's been a difficult week. I couldn't get by without the help of all of you and concentrating on work, because that's the way the former senator and former representative would have liked it. And without any more ado, she's probably up there saying, get back to work right now. So again, thank you. The deepest part of our hearts, of our family, for everything that you've done this week.
Journal Committee Report.
Your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 2nd, 2015 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed by Representative Steinmetz and Schwartz.
Representative Zwanitzer Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please proceed.
Gentlemen of the 63rd, 10 years ago when I was a freshman in this body, the last bill of general file on the last day, brought by former Representative Pete Elloway, who's there in the West Gallery, was to establish the Wyoming, at that point, Youth Challenge Program, now the Wyoming Cowboy Challenge Academy. We had the first class that year, and I'm pleased to report now we have the 23rd class of the Wyoming Cowboy Challenge Academy here with us today up in the South Gallery. Their director, Ed Meyer, is with them. He's actually in the West Gallery currently, but if you'd please make the this is the class scheduled to graduate in March. I think there are 27 of them. Representative Kirkbread and I went to the last graduation here in December, but we'd all invite you third week of March to the next graduation. But please make class 23 feel welcome.
Welcome to the House. The doctor of the day is Christina Berenger from Cheyenne. Please welcome her. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 144, Education, School Safety and Security. respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Throne, two no votes, Representative Hunt and Yeagy, signed by Representative Patton, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 192, Education Hathaway Scholarship Program, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Yeagy, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Throne, signed by Representative Patton, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 47, Shipment of Wine, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Larson, and Lindholm, two no votes, Representative Yeagy and McKim, signed by Representative McKim, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Joint Resolution 10, Magna Carta, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Yeagy, Larson, Lindholm, and McKim, signed by Representative McKim, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 163, Critical Access Hospital Endowment Challenge Program, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 174, Nicotine Products Regulation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, and Schwartz, two no votes, Representative Edmonds and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 183, Insurance Coverage, Early Refills of Prescription Eye Drops, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 211, Post-Conviction Actual Innocence, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Harvey, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, and Winters, Representative Pinnell voted no, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
Re-referrals, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 10 would like to re-refer two bills, House Bill 174 and House Bill 163, to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
House Bill 174 and House Bill 163 are re-referred to Appropriations Committee number 2. Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House Bill 144 be re-referred to Appropriations Committee Number 2.
House Bill 144 is re-referred to Appropriations Committee Number 2. We're now at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 103. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 103 from Representative Hunt, an act relating to career-technical education.
House Bill 103, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 108. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 108 from Representative Miller, an act relating to property.
House Bill 108, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it's so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 128.
House Bill 128 from Representative Greer, an act relating to time requirements.
House Bill 128 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 130.
House Bill 130 from Representative Burkhardt, an act relating to public pensions.
House Bill 130 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it's so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 137.
House Bill 137 from Representative Northrup, an act relating to child custody and visitation.
House Bill 137 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it's so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 146.
House Bill 146 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to the Uniform Trust Code.
House Bill 146 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 3. The clerk will read the resolution.
House Joint Resolution 3 from the Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, and joint resolution requesting Congress, state, and local authorities to take action to remediate damages caused by free-roaming wild horses.
There is an amendment. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move House Joint Resolution number 3, second reading amendment number 1. The purpose behind this amendment is yesterday it was asked if we had any data available to cite references. Those can be found on my desk, and in the amendment we have cited those references if you'd like to see them. Also on page 3, line 17, an issue was brought up with using the word envision and controlling our these wild horses. So that has been reworded to say utilizing all management and control methods authorized by Section 3D of the Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act. And I stand for questions.
Discussion on the amendment, Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I guess I just asked the sponsor, do we really need to include all these in the resolution? One concern I have, and of course I haven't looked at most of these, but that by including them in the resolution itself, we are sort of endorsing whatever management strategies are in there, whether we agree with them or not. And I'm just, knowing there's data is one thing, but incorporating them by reference is another thing entirely. And so I don't know if you could just respond to that concern.
Chairman Swann, Sir Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, would like to push back on this amendment a little bit, and specifically based on line 6, that we are quoting that these are all recommended strategies. And I would suffice it to say that probably most of us haven't had a chance to read more than one or two of these particular ones. So with that in mind, I think if we're going to give recommended strategies, I think we need to be a little more specific. So I would ask for a no vote.
Mr. Speaker, for your first time.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. I did read these studies, and I won't say I read them from cover to cover, but the sponsor of the amendment brought them to me. I read the summaries. I have a degree in some of that stuff, although it's been a long time since I practiced in it, but I sort of understand the lingo, and I was very impressed. And these things make an overwhelming case, and it was my suggestion that this amendment was drafted, I think, by incorporating those things into by reference. If one takes the time to go look at them, it makes an overwhelming argument in favor of the resolution that we're trying to send to Congress. So I would ask you to vote in favor.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time, Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. In regards to some of the questions that was asked regarding enforcement of what kind of types of regulations, how do we control these studies refer back to the Wild Horse and Burro Act and the enforcement measures that are supposed to be used by that act passed by Congress. In fact, one of these studies that's done by the agency on the federal level that handles wildlife and things that swim. Specifically calls out feral horses as not having been addressed, and their reason for exclusion on why these are harming sage-grouse areas was because enforcing existing regulations will address that concern. And that's what these studies are about, and that's what they call out for. I ask for your favorable consideration on this amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, point of order. Can I ask for a division of the amendment at this time still?
Well, Representative Swanson, I think you're too late. I'm sorry. You should have asked before the sponsor. We're voting on second reading amendment number one to House Bill or House Joint Resolution 3. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number one to House Joint Resolution 3 has passed. House Joint Resolution 3 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it's so ordered. We're now at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the third reading consent list as follows. House Bill 60, 70, 71, 86, 87, 88, 113, 139, 145, 160, 161, House Joint Resolutions 6 and 8.
Does anyone wish to have any of the bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll. First, the reading clerk will read them.
House Bill 60 from the Minerals Committee, an act relating to trust companies, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 70 from the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 71 from the Labor Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Investment in Nursing Program, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 86 from Representative Petroff, an act relating to the Board of Cooperative Educational Services, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 87 from Representative Somers, an act relating to the process for adoption of education content and performance standards, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 88 from Representative Wilson, an act relating to public health and safety, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 113 from Representative Greer, an act relating to public health and safety, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 139 from Representative Petroff, an act relating to unemployment compensation, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 145 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to fiduciaries, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 160 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to property, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 161 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to civil procedure, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Joint Resolution 6 from Representative Berger, a joint resolution supporting policy initiatives that promote local food production, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Joint Resolution 8 from Representative Dave Zwanitzer, a joint resolution requesting Congress to eliminate the freeze on longer combination vehicles, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming.
Now, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Flake.
Aye.
Burkhart. Byrd,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Clem,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Dayton,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Edwards,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Petrov.
Aye.
Piperinen.
Aye.
Pinnell.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Schwartz. Summers,
aye.
Steinmetz,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Bill 60, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Bill 70, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Zwanitzer Dan, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 no. As to House Bill 71, are there any changes? Baker, conflict? Are there any other changes? Madden, aye to no. Are there further changes? The vote is closed. 58 aye, 1 no, 1 conflict. As to House Bill 86, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 aye. As to House Bill 87, are there any changes? Croker, aye to no. Halverson, aye to no. Yagi, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Reeder, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Jennings, aye to no. Laux, aye to no. Winters, aye to no. Steinmetz, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Blackburn, aye to no. Are there further changes? The vote is closed. 49 aye, 11 no. As to House Bill 88, are there any changes? Baker? Baker, conflict. Greer? Aye to no. Madden? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 2 no, 1 conflict. As to House Bill 113, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Bill 139, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Bill 145, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Bill 160, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Bill 161, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Joint Resolution 6, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Joint Resolution 8, are there any changes? Byrd, aye to no. Connolly, aye to no. Pelkey, aye to no. Summers, aye to no. Esquivel, aye to no. Edmonds, aye to no. Blackburn, aye to no. Throne, aye to no. Wilson, aye to no. Steinmetz, aye to no. Barlow, Baldwin, aye to no. Winters, aye to no. Harvey, aye to no. Yagi, aye to no. Greer, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. McKim, aye to no. Larson Dan, aye to no. Kasparic, aye to no. Freeman, aye to no. Dayton, aye to no. P. Pieperinen, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Mr. Speaker, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 36 aye, 24 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 60, 70, 71, 86, 87, 88, 113, 139, 145, 160, 161, House Joint Resolution 6, and House Joint Resolution 8 have passed the House. We're now in that order of business of bills on third and final reading, regular. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 32. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 32 from Representative McKim, an act relating to public health, be it enacted by the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Representative Pinnell.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I move on the amendment to House Bill 32, Amendment 1. The reason for this is I feel there needs to be further discussion on this bill. The issue that I have is that in the bill it explains that hemp, which some of the components of it is obviously still illegal under the federal guidelines. It's still classified as Schedule 1 in this hemp, anyways. But also, I think that other issues that we haven't talked about, what this will bring as far as problems, issues, and concerns that we may have. I know I've heard testimony from the health department that there's probably going to be a cost on this, that bringing it into the state. Also, there's concerns bringing it into the state where it is still illegal. There's concerns that the federal government hasn't approved this particular oil. And also, the studies that are out there, there's not any study that states that this particular ingredient will do any good. And I did hear in the earlier testimony that there is a study being considered through the FDA. I think we need to wait until some of these studies come out to actually show that there is going to be a positive impact in this particular drug before we pass it here. Because I do think there's some concerns, and I've only raised a few. I'm sure that hopefully in this discussion that there'll be some more raised. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Representative Blake, for your first time.
For my first time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe under 0.3%, 0.03%, it is not a Schedule 1 drug. And it's highly regulated down in Colorado, the purity and the quality of this product. And the evidence that I've seen, sure, there hasn't been a study by the FDA, but it works. There's thousands of people who have moved to the state south of us just to get relief for their children. If it was my child or my grandchild, I would be going to the state south of us and getting this medication. And it does work for a vast majority of children that have these seizures. So I don't think we're going to have a problem with the percentage that's coming up here in the state. It's going to be handled by the neurologist. There's 20 neurologists in the state here. They have to sign off on this. So against the amendment and for this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Halverson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against this amendment, we have kids that aren't going to be able to wait for an FDA study. The longer they're on the big pharma regimen, the shorter their lifespan. We need to get these kids and these adults on this medication as fast as we can. And yes, I do call it medication because the results of taking this are phenomenal, and they need it now. Against the amendment, for the bill.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment and for the bill as well. This is not medical marijuana, folks. This is something different. Yes, it comes from hemp, but as it was mentioned just a moment ago, it's almost a negligible amount of THC, the active component that makes people high. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a component in hemp that helps those with epilepsy. This bill is crafted so narrowly, folks, it doesn't really open itself up to any particular problems. Imagine for a moment if you had a child with epilepsy who did not respond to an FDA treatment, not one time, not two times, maybe three times, and that this component right here was the key that kept your child from not having seizures, or maybe bringing those seizures from maybe 15 a day down to maybe 2 a week. And that's what we're talking about, folks. We're talking about a narrowly crafted bill for something that works for this narrow population. And so I would urge you to stand against this amendment and for the bill. Thank you.
Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also rise on and against the amendment for the bill. There is quite a bit of research done out there, not all of it FDA approved, but it's research nonetheless. The material is available on the market for sale. It only has to be okay to ship into a state that approves it. So we only have that roadblock between us and being able to treat these pediatric epilepsy cases with this very valuable material. It goes by the acronym CBD, which stands for cannabidiol, not to be mistaken for THC, which is the hallucinogenic component of the weed. They're two different things. This is the therapeutic component derivative of the plant. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure where I am on it. I've still got a few questions that haven't quite been answered. This body has pretty consistently pushed back on the idea of using these types of products, and so I think it's good that we have a further conversation on it. The specific question that I asked in general filed, and I think the sponsor was distracted at the time and couldn't get it answered, was can this be synthesized in a laboratory without having to use the plant source? And or at least synthesized economically in some fashion. Thank you.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My, I don't know whether I'm for it or against it. My issue was in general file was all of this stuff on the first 8 pages. And what I was wondering is why we couldn't have done this by starting the bill on line 17 on page 8 and eliminate all the bookwork that we're really saying that the health department has to do for, and it's going to be expensive, and it's not going to be serving the people that need this product either. It just seems like an unnecessary involvement of government. And I didn't get an answer on that of why can't we just say we're exempting it from criminal and civil penalties for the medical use of hemp extract, period.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll try to give you just a quick history on the legality of what we're talking about here and cover some of these points. In 1970, the Controlled Substances Act was passed by the U.S. Congress. In there it states that all Schedule I drugs, and this is the requirements to be on a Schedule I drug list, it has to be a drug or substance that has a high potential for abuse. Okay? It has to be a substance that has no accepted medical use in treatments. The third one is it lacks the accepted safety for use of a substance under medical supervision. Now, that's the classification. Those are the lists that you have to put a medical into a substance number one, into that particular grouping there. All the cannabinoids were placed into that. All right, so then along comes the FDA in 1999, and they say hemp seed oil is safe for use. You can use it in as a replaced butter. You can also use it in salad oil. No regulations regarding hemp oil as a drug was placed on at that time. 2001, the DEA, which was founded just after the Controlled Substance Act, by the way, came into being, attempted to ban people and companies from importing hemp oil or selling products containing hemp oil. Now, what that act did is simply outlawed the growth and selling of hemp within the United States. The Control Act did. So there was nothing to be done at that point. Now they come along in 1999 and 2001 and says, you know, hemp oil really doesn't fit into this, and we don't have any regulations against that. So the hemp industry at that time sued them, the DEA, on that, and won, by the way. So now you can have hemp oil in many products, but the way it's listed right now, it's hemp oil with a no THC or a THC less than a 0.3%. That's why the bill is so narrowly crafted the way it is right now, which means it's not illegal. If hemp is illegal, but not this particular product we're talking about here now. Okay? All right. Then in 2014, in the Farm Bill, the U.S. government came forth and says, you know, we're going to give a license to 15 states to farm and research hemp. And that was done. There's 15 states out there. At that time, 10 of the states came along and said, you know, we're seeing results from this CBD oil in a particular disease, a particular ailment that children go through. And that's the epileptic seizures. It's called intractable. Intractable meaning it's been gone through two or three different prescribed drugs and showing no results. Therefore, it's not working. And they're showing results on this. So then they came forth and the state says, all right, let's run bills and authorize CBD oil to be used within our state. Well, there's one little problem on that. You still can't transport hemp oil because it's still classified as hemp, even though it's not classified as a drug. And so therefore, as is pointed out in my bill on page one, I put an exception to that. And in contact with the state to the south, they said you have to have an exception to transport hemp across the state line. And therefore, we exempted that in that first section there. It says, penalties and provisions of this chapter shall not apply to medical use of hemp extract as described in this bill. So that allows us then to ship that in. Also, Congress has before them at this point a bill that's been referred to a committee and sitting there still. It's called the 2014 Charlotte's Web Medical Act, which is still sitting there. In essence, what we're trying to say is the following. The cannabidiol made from industrial hemp is legal to purchase and consume. Cannabidiol made from medical marijuana, you must live in that state that has legitimized marijuana, and then you can purchase and consume it. That's just the short end of it. We're doing what's set up for us. Why the big long bill? Protection of the consumer. If we have that shipped in, that simply indicates to the law enforcement community that these people are legal. They have that. They've gone to a neurologist. They've been examined. He says, you know, hemp oil might help this particular person. Therefore, give them a card. Let them go purchase it, and we'll help them out as much as we can. So, with that, Mr. Speaker, I'll stand in for questions.
Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Pinnell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I welcome the good debate on this bill, but I do believe from the information I have, the hemp is still classified as Schedule 1, even though I know it's a lesser amount than marijuana. as far as the ingredient. And currently, right now, the federal government seems to be ignoring some of the laws out there. But that may change, and so we must be aware of that. That's why I think we need to, which we heard earlier, that there is a study underway through the FDA of possibly bringing some information out to see whether this will do some good. So I think that we could probably hold off and maybe down the road look at this again. But right now I would urge you to vote no on the bill. And at this time I would pull the amendment.
Third reading amendment number one has been withdrawn. We're back on the bill. House Bill 32. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Gay,
aye. Greer,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
no.
Larson Lloyd,
aye.
Larson Dan,
aye.
Lindholm,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
no.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
aye.
Pelkey,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Piperinen,
aye.
Pinnell,
no.
Reeder,
aye.
Schwartz,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Steinmetz,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
aye.
Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? Eklund, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 53 aye, 7 no.
House Bill 32, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 32 has passed the House. Representative Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor once again.
Please proceed.
Brothers and sisters of the 63rd, if you'd look up in the South Gallery, you'll see Class 24 of the Wyoming Cowboy Challenge Academy. These are the new recruits, if you will, that have had about a month into this point, maybe a little less. We have 42 members of the current class. We're going to encourage them all to stay with the program for the next 5 months and do their best. So if you'd please welcome them and make them feel at home.
Welcome to the House. We're now at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Representative Steinmetz. Madam Majority Floor Leader, would you like to make a motion to that effect?
It would be my pleasure, Mr. Speaker.
It would be our pleasure to hear your motion.
I move that the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole so that we can have Chairman Steinmetz work the general file as follows. House Bill 126, 159, 122, 180, 77, 112, House Joint Resolution 7, House Bill 172, 198, 147, 215, 182, 177, 121, 181, 135, 154, 155, 157, 136, 149, 143, House Joint Resolution 9, 201, 28-142.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Steinmetz.
The Committee of Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 126, Chairman Zwanitzer. The reading clerk will read the bill first.
House Bill 126 from Representative Throne, an act relating to elections, providing that a candidate's campaign committee may file reports for a candidate as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 126, Candidate Filing Requirements, respectfully report saying back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Muniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Vice Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 126 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. I'll turn it over to Madam Minority Floor Leader for the explanations.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a bill where I think if I had asked all of you, you might have been willing to co-sponsor. This bill cleans up a reporting requirement in our candidate financing laws that requires all of us who have campaign committees to report twice. You have to file your campaign committee report, and then you also have to create a separate account with the Secretary of State, file a candidate report, and if you're like me, you check a box that says, I have nothing to report. That's been a burdensome requirement for several years now, and it was just sort of a glitch in the statutes that left it that way. So the purpose of this bill is to eliminate the candidate reporting requirement when you have a campaign committee. And I think it's important that everybody understand that you're not required to have a campaign committee, and you can still just file as a candidate, and that doesn't change. But if you have a campaign committee, you will no longer have to also check the candidate box, and in my case, sometimes get early morning phone calls from the nice people in the Secretary of State's office reminding me that I have a deadline that day. And I also need to explain the... I wanted to give the overview of the bill before the Standing Committee Amendment. All the Standing Committee Amendment does is it makes the bill effective immediately, because actually the Secretary of State starts working now on the next election cycle, and by the end of this calendar year, they freeze their codes. They want the system totally functioning, so that when the next election year starts, 2016, they're ready to go. And to implement this, they need a modest appropriation, a one-time appropriation of $56,000 to cover the technical costs of fixing the YCFIS system and making sure that it functions properly for the next election cycle. And I would be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Okay, are you, question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion passes. The Standing Committee Amendment Number, the amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Is there any discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of the bill, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. We're on to House Bill 159. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 159. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 159 from Representative Throne, an act relating to the separate statewide riding assessment, eliminating the riding assessment, making conforming amendments, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number four, Education, to whom is referred to House Bill 159, Education Writing Assessment, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Yagi, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Piperino, Summers, and Throne, signed by Representative Patton, Chairman, and further reviewed by your committee number two, Appropriations, who respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, and it was signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Patton?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 159 do pass and yield the floor to the Prime Sponsor.
Madam Majority Chairwoman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm always happy to, you know, be the majority floor leader. Folks, for a few sessions now, we've dealt off and on with our statewide writing assessment. I know that many of us have heard from our constituents, and if you did any door knocking this year, you probably heard it in spades, that our parents feel like we're testing kids too much. And so I'm always on the lookout for an opportunity of a test that we don't need, that doesn't really inform instruction, takes valuable class time, and in the end is not worth the money that we're spending on it. The writing assessment in 2012, we separated it from the other statewide assessment. It's not used for our federal compliance, so there are no federal funds implications with this. And we directed the Department of Education to develop a test, and we put this in the session laws back in 2012, that would only take 3 hours of testing time and would be administered in third, fifth, and seventh grade. And last year, I had a child in seventh grade, and I was horrified when I got the standard call from my school saying, please make sure your child is in school for the next 2 weeks. We will be doing, they call it SAWS, Statewide Assessment of Writing. And so I was a little concerned because I remembered we put a time limit on that thing. How can it possibly take 2 weeks? And so then I consulted with elementary school teachers, and I learned that that the way the test had been redesigned, there was no way they could meet the three-hour time limit. And my next call was probably to our fine staff to ask them to look into whether we could eliminate it. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I will point out that eliminating this test does save $1.8 million over the life of our contract with the testing contractor. And again, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and against this bill, in committee number one, we have been hearing from the interim dean of the law school at the institution over the hill. And part of our education on the subject of this school was to look at a 109-page survey of the members of the Wyoming Bar and all their comments. The number one comment that ran throughout this 109-page survey report was poor writing skills. Now, these are postgraduate students, and it's the number one issue that hiring firms had when hiring students from this institution and this school in particular. Poor writing skills. We have got to start teaching these kids to write in the earlier grades, and I would urge your no vote on this bill to preserve the writing assessment.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for this bill, I'm all for improving our students' writing skills, but I just don't think that this test is the right method of doing it. These high-stakes tests take away from the teaching time where we can actually let the schools focus on teaching the skills that they need and instead of having these high-stakes tests. So I think it's wise to get rid of it, and I would support the bill.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and in support of this bill, I agree as well. One of the number one comments, again, is too many tests as far as schools. And so I applaud this bill and would ask for your affirmative vote on it as well.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the bill. And, you know, it's interesting, folks, that what we've done to ourselves in this, we're one of the few states that actually tests writing as a, and for a while we had it rolled into our No Child Left Behind scores. And so consequently, the way we teach writing across the state changed. And we would all think, you folks who are employers, us folks who have kids, you'd think, number one, spelling, punctuation, be able to write coherent sentences, be able to write essays, convincing paragraphs, letters for recommendation. And so once we went to this writing component and got rolled into No Child Left Behind, there then became other components to it called functional writing, and the punctuation and spelling were discounted as how you scored the papers. And so it was simply how to make lists and spelling and punctuation. Part of our time in accountability committee, I specifically dug into the tests and tried to amend it that punctuation and spelling would be key parts of the of how these papers are graded. But this is, in fact, it's a very expensive test. So we have people around the state, educators, will pick what's called an anchor paper. And that changes literally every year because it's different educators. So some educators might say, well, punctuation should only count for this percent or this much. And so then when they get shipped out of state to be read in 1 minute or less and scored, then it goes off this anchor paper. And so you see these scores all over. I think back to the 90s in my high school, and I think we're the second or third largest high school, we really had a great plan for writing. Every teacher had it posted in the room. We all taught it the same way, and our kids, I think, were excellent writers. We don't do that anymore, and it's all chasing the test, and I think we've really done a disservice. And so not only does this bill save money and saves time, and I think it's going to put this back to the local districts and the local teachers to really, let's really teach writing again and get back to where we were with this. So on in support of the bill.
Representative Piperinen.
On and for the bill, Madam Chairman. As one who's had to administer these things and this type of summative assessment that we get comes too late in the year for us to do anything. And by the time we get back in the fall and have the classes assigned, the data that's drawn from the SAWS test is a moot thing. As soon as I finish this session here, I go back to doing PAWS. PAWS will be waiting for me the when I return. I have a ton of assessments that I'm giving throughout the year. Unbelievable, the number of assessments that kids are getting now, and that does get in the way of good teaching. We have enough formative assessments throughout the year to keep the kids moving.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't know where I stand for sure on the bill. I've heard all the arguments. Too much testing takes away from school time. I guess I'm wondering, without some formal assessment, how do the parents know how their students are doing? That was a reason for these assessments. And I wonder, at what point in time are the parents really clear on whether their child is prepared for the next grade or the next grade or for college? If you could answer that, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Winters.
Madam Chairman,
I guess I can kind of answer that a little bit from discussion from with my own district. I am on and for this bill because of that. Right now, because it takes so long to do the judging and grading of the tests as they currently stand, many times they don't get these results until well into the following school year. And so it's actually made it more difficult for schools to perform the way they would want to because of the length of time. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
On and for this bill, it is chasing a test. And if you've been helping your students write a certain way, if the prompt is not the same way and the kids can't adjust, then all of a sudden you get test results to where that your students can't write. I think it would be much better for the local districts to come up with their own system.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the bill. When first looking at this, you kind of get that question as, are we teaching the kids, or are we just walking away from the kids relative to being able to express themselves in written form? And the answer to that is, we are doing that. That is occurring in the schools today. Elementary and secondary schools do teach how to write. One of the alternative schools, they still use a test to make sure that the written expression is valid and the punctuation is there and that the content is there, the formation of a thought and the paragraph is there. They do that. This is just a test. We're no longer under pause. It's not a requirement under pause. So why do we have a separate test? And that's what the heart explained to our committee that voted 9-0 on the support of this bill. On and for the bill.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Good discussion. I want to go back to the concerns of the good representative from Star Valley. I, of course, am a member of the Wyoming Bar, and my writing skills are my most important skill as an attorney. It is my bread and butter. And in my law firm, or my the law firm I practice with, it's not my law firm, we do not hire people who can't write. The most important thing they give us is not their transcript, it's not their resume, it's their writing sample. And if they have a bad writing sample, they most likely will not get a job. My problem with, we've had a writing assessment for at least 9 years, maybe 10 years. And I think it actually detracts from the teaching of writing for all the reasons that have been said. I would love it if the language arts teachers in my son's schools would take the time that they spend on the test and just work with the kids. You know, you become a better writer by writing, and you become a better writer by doing in-depth critical thinking writing, which a test cannot capture. And so that is why I do not think this particular test actually improves writing. I think it actually takes away from the teaching of writing, and we need to try a different approach. And with regard to the question from the gentleman from Eastern Laramie County, I think other people sort of answered that question, but when I see the SAWS results, that does not tell me whether my child can write or not. I work with my children on their regular writing projects throughout the year. That's how I tell if my kids can write. The test score is meaningless to me. I care more about, you know, their actual written product from the classroom. That's really what counts. And if there are no further questions, I would call for the question.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Throne's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 159 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
House Bill 159 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 122. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 122 from Representative Nicholas, an act relating to workers' compensation, clarifying that a permanent total disability award be reduced for prior partial awards as specified, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 122, Workers' Compensation Permanent Disability, respectfully reports saying back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman, and further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Moniz, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 122 do pass, and I will turn the explanation over to the good sponsor of the bill, Representative Nicholas.
Oh. I quit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill basically is it's a corrective bill. In 2012, the Workers' Compensation Division modified the way that they were paying out permanent total disability benefits because they sat down and read the statute during a rule revision and also a computer update, and they changed how they were interpreting and paying out permanent total disability. And none of us knew it, some of us folks that practice law and workers' compensation law, until it came up to me in a case I was doing. And so then I met with the division several months ago. They said, well, this is our new interpretation of the statute. And I said, fine, I'll bring a bill to fix it. So I brought this bill. Subsequent to that time, the division has come back to me and said, yeah, this is probably the right interpretation, but go ahead with the bill, and just so that this kind of a technical interpretive error doesn't happen again. So basically, all this goes back to the way permanent total disability was paid out in 2012. If you look at the monetary footnote, that's only partially correct because this is the way they were paying benefits. And what they did was they extended the payout period by about 30 or 40 months with the same amount of total disability benefits, thereby paying those people who have found have been permanently totally disabled less over an extended period of time. And in having this discussion with them in the last couple of weeks, they said, this is the right thing to do. The division is in support of the bill. So if you have any questions, I would go ahead and call for the question on the bill.
Question being called. All those are in favor of Representative Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 122 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. House Bill 122 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 180. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 180 from Representative Crone, an act relating to child protection, limiting disclosure of information obtained in a child abuse or neglect case as specified, requiring a court order to obtain information as specified and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 209, Transfer of Federal Lands, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Halverson, Croker, Miller, Pinnell, Winters, 3 no votes, Representative Escobel, Crone, and Pelkey, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
I think we read in the wrong bill there. Could we double check that up there, please?
You're right. I was reading about children and then I had land.
I voted against my own bill if that was...
We will reread in the bill, House Bill 180.
180? Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All righty, we'll try this one. House Bill 180 from Representative Crone, an act relating to child protection limiting disclosure of information obtained in a child abuse or neglect case as specified, requiring a court order to obtain information as specified, and providing for an effective date.
You have heard the real reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 180 do pass. And for the explanation of the bill, Representative Crone.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members, this deals with specific cases that relate to child abuse cases. So currently there's really three tiers of how these cases can be handled. You can have a juvenile case that involves either a juvenile protection case or a juvenile abuse case that's handled by the juvenile court. And all of the information contained in those types of cases are confidential under existing law. You can have a criminal case where you would have someone being prosecuted for child abuse, and during the pendency of that case, the information particularly related to the child's interview with law enforcement would remain confidential for a portion of that case until that case is resolved. You could also have a civil case that could occur. For example, you could have a divorce proceeding where the part of the allegations for custody would involve this type of abuse or the type of treatment that a parent had with their children. And currently, right now, there are protections contained in the statute for those civil type cases. What this bill does is extends those protections and provides the court with a roadmap of how to go forward. And some of these can be very sensitive. They can be specific to a child and very difficult. You could have a sexual assault situation where you have a young child describing to law enforcement in an interview what occurred. You could have a physical abuse case where a child's describing to law enforcement what a parent or what a step-parent was doing. And so this is very sensitive type of information. And what this bill does is try to restrict who has access to that information, who is able to use that information in a court proceeding, and what actually happens with that information once the case is resolved. And so walking through the bill, the new subsection HH talks about an in-camera review and an option for an in-camera review. And that basically means a court would take a look at this information and determine whether or not it should be given to the opposing party or a party in a civil case. Now, that's an existing law right now. What this does is expands the authority of the judge or gives a roadmap to the judge about what happens once that information is disclosed. And so if you turn to page 3, it discusses three options. The court can deny the request and say this information is either irrelevant or too sensitive to release in a civil case. The court could require the counsel to say this: once you use this information, it cannot be disseminated to any other party. Or it could just say you don't get a copy of this information, but you have an opportunity to review it and use it in the case. So basically, it provides this extra layer of protection and this roadmap for district courts in civil cases moving forward. And with that, I would take any questions.
We have a committee of the whole amendment. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 180 and ask for your favorable consideration. And you can see this is a fairly surgical amendment. And all it does, the good representative from Park County was talking about the ability of a court to do an in-camera review. The way the legislation is written now, it requires the court to do that. And there are a lot of circumstances where a court, you know, the parties can tell the court what is in the record. It's not always necessary to have an in-camera review. And by requiring it every time, I think you build in at least the potential for further delay on these decisions and certainly adding to an already crowded court docket. So this just makes clear that the court may do that. Certainly if a court feels it needs to look at the record or the item of evidence before making a decision, it can do that, and the court can make a decision on whether that's necessary or not. So I'd ask for your aye vote and take any questions on the amendment.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is a friendly amendment. There are situations where the council can work out the agreement without having that in-camera review, and this language would allow, when it's appropriate, the parties could request that. So I believe that's a friendly amendment and would urge an aye vote.
Question being called. All those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of House Bill 180 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House Bill 180 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 77. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 77 from Representative Lindholm, an act relating to the Wyoming Retirement System, authorizing purchase of credits for prior military service as specified, providing purchase conditions and requirements, granting rulemaking authority, and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 77, State Employees Veterans Service Credit, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, Eklund, Laux, Reeder, Walters, and Dave Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman. Further reviewed by your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 77, State Employees Veterans Service Credit. They report back to the House with a recommendation that do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Moniz, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 77 do pass, and I further move that the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And, Madam Chairman, I would like to turn the explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment to the representative that we all look up to, Representative Lindholm.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to go through the Standing Committee Amendment on House Bill 77 with everyone on page 1, above line 1. In the catch title, we deleted state employees and inserted Wyoming Retirement System. The purpose for that change was because I had inadvertently excluded the majority of the Wyoming Retirement System by just putting state employees. The state employees is a relatively small group versus your teachers. And those types of groups. So by inserting Wyoming Retirement System, we catch them all. On page 2, line 21, after age, insert that semicolon, delete the balance of the line, and also delete page 2, line 22. And the reason for that is with that date inserted there, we had cut off Tier 2 employees from this act, and this way it includes everyone. I'll stand for questions on the amendment.
Is there any discussion? Okay. Question being called, you have heard the motion on the Standing Committee. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, to the members of the 63rd, I'd like to say that this bill does two really cool things. Number one, it provides a benefit to our veterans. And number two, it doesn't cost the state a dime. That's pretty much the gist of this. But I'll go through it so everybody understands it, because it can be fairly complicated. What we're looking at here is our veterans are coming home after getting out of the military with an honorable discharge. And they come back with sometimes a trade, sometimes not, depending on how they served in the military and what capacity they actually served. But one thing they do not come back with is any kind of a pension from their time in the military. There's no retirement there whatsoever. Granted, they have a thrift savings plan, which is a 401k, but that's a voluntary deal. And I'm sure many of you know an 18-year-old that will voluntarily jump into a 401k type program. So it's not really that utilized. So they don't have a pension until they serve they've got to serve 20 years before the military can have a pension. So what we're doing in this bill is we're saying, come to work for us in the state of Wyoming, for the state of Wyoming, and we'll allow you to use up to 8 years, year for year, so 1 year of service for 1 year of your pension, and you have to buy it. And that way, it's on that employee, it's on that member, if they so choose, to purchase those years. And that's the gist of it. This already exists in our statute. Each state employee can purchase right now up to 5 years. Those are floating years. They can also purchase more years on top of that if they happen to be a law enforcement officer from another state. That's all in statute. So what we're basically doing is taking language that already exists and saying, if you're a veteran with an honorable discharge, you work for the state of Wyoming, you can also purchase up to a max of 8 years. And I'll go through the bill, and hopefully it'll help clarify some things with you. Starting on page one, any vested member who is honorably discharged, that's the important part here, folks. We need to ensure they're honorably discharged, and most of our vets are. They're just getting out of the military. An honorable discharge just basically means you were a good boy while you were in, or girl, pardon me. sorry, Elaine. Purchase service credits shall be as authorized and limited by Section 415C and 415N of the Internal Revenue Code and rules promulgated by the board. What that states is the Internal Revenue Code already states that you can purchase years into your pension. You can already do these things. 1 year of military service may be purchased, or 1 year of service credit may be purchased for 1 year of military service up to a maximum of 8 years. The maximum 8 years cap that we put in place stems from when you sign up in the military, you sign up for 4 or 5 or 6 years, something like that. But if you read the fine print when you sign up for the military, and I learned this the hard way, is once you're out, you're never really out. You're in the ready reserve. You've got to serve a couple more years until you reach that eight year mark. And those are the folks that they may have gotten out, say they got out after 5 years. They've still got 3 years to go, and those will be the folks that get called back first and foremost if the United States were to need them. So that's why we put that cap at 8 years. Now, granted, keep in mind, 1 year of service credit may be purchased for 1 year of military service, and it has to be an honorable year of service. Cumulative purchases of service credit under this section and otherwise authorized under the Wyoming Retirement Act shall not exceed 8 years. An employee electing to purchase service credit shall pay into the account a single lump sum. What we're talking about there is you can roll over if this person has a 401k or has an IRA or something like that. They can roll that over into their pension to pay for this, because if you look, I put a handout, and it's titled House Bill 77. And that gives you an idea of what kind of money it takes to buy a year. Now, this is actuarially sound. We do this. We already do this for our employees, but the reason we're able to do this is because the member within the Wyoming retirement system is actually paying for every dime it would cost them for that pension. That's how we keep the pension sound, folks. It's an expensive deal, and that's why it's really handy to be able to roll over a Roth IRA or a regular IRA or 401k into the plan, is because you can invest that money that you've already invested into the Wyoming State retirement system. So single lump sum equal to the actuarial equivalent of the benefits to be derived from the service credit, computed on the basis of actuarial assumptions approved by the board and the individual's attained age and average salary for the highest 3 continuous years of the covered service, or for the duration of state employment if less than 3 years. So you can look at that handout that you got, guys, and you can see how the higher age you go, the more expensive it's going to get, the more pay you get, and so on. It can cost quite a bit of money. So that's why we obviously suggest that if you're going to buy in, you do it early. Now, you don't have to purchase all 8 years at once. You don't have to do it all. You can do 1 year at a time. So say you wanted to purchase 1 year, you can just pay for that 1 year and then save for the next year until you can purchase another year into your pension. You don't have to do all 8 years at a time, but whatever you elect to purchase as far as years, you have to pay for it all at once. So if you want to purchase 2 years, you got to pay for 2 years right there.
Represent, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
Service credit purchased under this subsection shall not be used to determine vested eligibility to receive benefits under this article. In order to receive these type of benefits, you have to be vested with the state of Wyoming, which takes 4 years. And you can't use your service credit to say, all right, all of a sudden I'm vested, even though I've only been working here 2 weeks. It doesn't roll backwards like that. This only counts to be able to purchase service credit pension years. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to, I think, answer some questions that I seem to have on some people's faces. The impact of the retirement system is kind of no specific impact. Those service credits that are purchased, the price of them is what you would have had in there if you would have been in the plan the whole time. You don't buy them for pennies on the dollar. You have to contribute the full amount you would have contributed plus the interest. So it's kind of a wash to the pension plan. We already do this with state employees. They can buy, they call it airtime. They can buy 5 years. And usually you get people who come from another plan and want to reinvest their money who do that. It's not a cheap proposition by any means to come up with, say, 8 years of your pension contributions at once to put in there. So just wanted people to be clear on that, not one way or the other on the bill, vote your conscience, but wanted to address the pension issues.
Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just had one question for the good bringer of this bill. Is this also available to private enterprise? Because I know it's really hard private enterprise to even try to compete with state wages and benefits plus now the opportunity on this pension plan. So I wondered if that was discussed or if you know the answer to that one.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm looking at this example that was passed out, Tier 1 and Tier 2, and these dollar figures. And, you know, I thought I was okay with this until maybe I don't understand this. But this 39, or I'll start with the top one, 46,300, that isn't a constant, I assume, because the buy-in cost is got to be controlled by the salary that the individual's earning in the job at Wyoming, not the one in the Air Force or the military, because it won't be revenue neutral that way. For example, if you have you hire somebody to work for the state for $150,000 and he continues working throughout his career at $150,000, he's going to get a retirement check of about $110,000 a year. And that buy-in that we see here isn't going to cut it. So maybe I wasn't listening when you went over this example, but I don't understand Tier 1, I don't understand Tier 2, and I don't know where those numbers came from.
Representative Wanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Currently neutral on the bill, but I do have a significant concern question that I hope the sponsor can alleviate. So if you're going into the federal service, you get the opportunity, once you join state government and be vested in the system, to buy up to 8 years, one at a time. If you're a current state employee, you get one shot, and you have to buy all up to 5 years at just one time. You don't get the option to buy a year here and a year there. You have to say, my one time, I have to do that and have the money to keep it actuarially sound. My concern is, if you go into the National Guard and you go into the Wyoming National Guard and join state employment, you're under the same subject rules, as far as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that you only get that one chance for a five-year buy as a Wyoming National Guardsman. But under this bill, if you've joined the federal service instead of the Wyoming National Guard and you come back, you're being treated differently for your veteran service credit. And I feel there might be a disparity there, and I would wonder if the bringer of the bill could address that.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Starting right where we left off, actually the way this deal works is if you're in the National Guard you can purchase 1 year at a time. If you're a regular state employee, you can purchase up to 1 year at a time for those 5 years. Now, a National Guardsman does have the opportunity to purchase up to 8 years. If they're called by the federal government to go and perform duties overseas, 1 year of active duty service for 1 year of service credit. It's just the same how it works there. Regarding some of the other questions, there are some companies out there that do provide service credit for those veterans returning and do go work for them. So that is a possibility. It just depends on the company you work for. I'd also like to mention that every state west of the Mississippi already does this, some to varying different degrees, some more, some less. Regarding how this Tier 1 and Tier 2 program works, as I'm sure the person that brought the question understands the difference between Tier 1 and Tier 2, those benefits and how they work. This is just an example based on how much a person makes, how old they are. It goes on a sliding scale, you know, so it could change. These numbers are volatile, and that's why they change so much. Thank you.
Representatives wanted, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. We had testimony during the committee with the Wyoming Retirement System folks there concerning the question, can you buy a year at a time? And their testimony in front of our committee was that you can on this bill. Now, I'm not sure that any of the committee members differentiated if other state employees can, so we will look into that. But at least to answer the question, the testimony from that department was no matter which plan you're on, it's actuarially sound, and you could buy 2 years and then wait a couple of years and buy 2 years and wait a couple of years on this. So, but we'll see if we can't get that figured out for the bringer of the question.
Representative Lindholm. Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Lindholm's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 77 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. House Bill 77 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 112. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 112 from Representative Petroff, an act relating to administration of government, removing certain requirements for municipality to impose mill levies to be eligible for capital construction grants as specified, providing applicability and providing for an effective date. Madam Chairman, the Committee Number 3 of Revenue, to whom is referred House Bill 112, Capital Construction Grant Eligibility, reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Jennings, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Reeder, and Wilson, signed by Representative Wilson, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, you do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 112 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And all that does is change the enactment date. And I'm going to turn the explanation over to the sponsor of the bill, Representative Petroff.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And the Standing Committee Amendment does just change the enactment date. So whether you're for the or against the bill, I think that that would probably be an easy vote if you'd like to get that out of the way.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. So this bill looks like a little bill, but it's got a very long backstory. This bill is the story of an ice rink, a whole lot of taxes, and a landslide. So let's start with the ice rink. The ice rink was built in my community, my town of Jackson, and I got permission to use the word, in 1990. And at that time, we received a grant from what was then the Farm and Loan Board for a portion of this ice rink. Now, I can tell you that these construction grants, and I've looked through the last 3.5 years of grants, these construction grants are for real needs in your community, needs that you would expect a municipality or a county to provide, like water, sewer, emergency services. They're for things like building onto your emergency room. They're for fire engines. Not necessarily for things like ice rinks. So 4 years later, when there was a legislative meeting in my town, some legislators saw the really nice plaque that we had put on our ice rink that said, in partnership with the state of Wyoming. Not too happy about where the funds had come from, they came back to the next session in 1996 and carved my community out of being able to be eligible for these loans. And the way they did it, and you'll see a big packet on your desk that starts with a page from the session laws of 1996. It says HB 112 on the front. And everything that's underlined is all of the new language that they put in 1996. So all this was the new language. And the first section of it, really they were addressing, we want you to have skin in the game. If you're going to get these loans, we want to know that your community has some skin in the game. So they've set some minimum requirements for counties, special districts, and municipalities in terms of how many mills they have to levy in order to qualify for these loans. And then you can almost hear the discussion that happens after that when you get down to the second part where somebody's saying, wait a minute, that carves out my community. We didn't want to do that, and we issue taxes in this way. So they've added a section that says the Farm Loan Board may waive the taxation requirements imposed by this subsection for good cause shown, such as other funding sources. Okay, so that made somebody happy, and now they were going to vote for the bill. But then we still had to do the carve-out, so we added this last little section. But in no case shall the Farm Loan Board authorize any grant to any municipality under this section, which does not impose at least 2 or 25% of the available mills. So what we've done is we've now said any county does not have to issue those mills. We have that expectation, but we can look at other funding sources to waive that requirement completely. Any special district, we can look at any other funding sources to completely waive that requirement. Any municipalities, we can look at any other funding sources, except you have to issue at least 2 mills. And you know who that carves out? That carves out Jackson, that carves out Lost Springs, Population 4, and that carves out Van Tassel, Population 15. So for 20 years, we've been carved out of receiving these, of being eligible for these grants. And for 25 years, we haven't received any of these grants. So the first thing I'm here to do is to publicly apologize for the ice rink. It was an inappropriate grant, but we're back to say that we do charge a lot of taxes, and we just want, all we're asking for is the ability for that to be considered when these grants come up. So we're not asking that mill requirement be waived. We're just asking to be part of the whole group of every single other county, every single other municipality nearly, and every single other district that gets to have other income counted. And so if you'll turn to page 2, one thing I want to point out, the town of Jackson is where the working people live in my county. The wealthy people that you think of, our community is a community of haves and have-nots, and the working people live in town. So what we asked several other communities to do, what we asked their assessors to do, is to take a house that a working person might live in, so a house that's maybe 1,500 square feet in town, built 20 or 25 years ago of average construction, and how much is that worth, and how much is that individual paying in mill levies? And so you can see that our community, compared to the other 4 communities listed, the next highest community, we're 50% above that. And even though that is a county mill, that's an imposition on our citizens who are doctors and nurses and teachers and volunteer firefighters and coaches, and they're the people we're trying to keep in our community. And we go to great lengths in our community to try to provide affordable housing opportunities. And so for us to tax in this way would be it would be the last tax we would look at in our community. Let me put it that way. So, and if we tax the same as, say, the community on the bottom of this list, if we tax the same number of mills and we taxed the same amount of excise tax, we would be receiving, just in our town, $6.3 million less than we receive today. And if you go to the next highest on this list, the second from the bottom, if we taxed the same way they did with excise taxes and mills, our town would be receiving $1.6 million less than it does today. So you can see that for our community, it makes far more sense to issue excise taxes. If you turn to page 3, just really quickly, this is just to show that, yes, our wages are on the higher end, but they're certainly not 50% above what they are in other communities. Page number 4 just looks at different excise taxes to show that we are in the top 10 counties for the excise tax that we charge. If you turn to page 5, here's some of the other things that we do in our community that levy fees onto businesses and developers. This example shows if I wanted to open a restaurant in the town of Jackson and I was looking at renting a 3,000 square foot space that used to be a retail space. You go through an affordable housing calculation, and at the bottom right, what I would owe to the town of Jackson just in affordable housing fees would be $118,000. That's levied from our town in affordable housing fees. We also have parking fees. Like many of you, we probably have water and sewer fees, we have them. You probably have them as well. And we also have development fees for school, and we have development fees for our recreation district. The next two pages are other affordable housing calculations. Page number 8 just shows gross revenue versus population, and you can see that we are in the top 3 counties for revenue compared to population. And the reason I put all of this stuff in here, I realize it gets cumbersome. Page 9 looks at total taxes per capita in each county. Page number 10, 11, and 12, it shows all the municipalities. We have the 7th highest share of state sales tax and the 10th highest per capita. And all I'm showing is that there are so many different ways to look at this. But for these grants, we have chosen to look at it in one narrow way. And we've chosen to make an exception for every single community and district except 3 in our state. And the reason this came up is that many of you know of the landslide in our community last spring. We went to the SLIB board and requested an emergency loan, and that's what a part of this money goes to, are the emergencies that show up in our communities. And so we applied for an emergency loan, and we received $1 million grant, or we were approved for $1 million grant. We did not receive it because of this requirement that was later discovered in the Attorney General's office. This bill does not change. I mean, we would still have to go back and apply it. It does not change that ruling. This bill does not automatically qualify us for any grants. It just allows us to be put back in that pool to be considered for the emergency and infrastructure grants that are available in this pool. And I will, at this point, stand for any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 112 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill 112 does pass. The next Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman Steinmetz. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report. Oh, I'm sorry. Pardon me. Sorry about that, Madam Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole begs leave to rise and sit again until 2 p.m. And my fellow members, I just wanted to remind you that I did email you and had delivered to your desk a schedule of our suggested week through February 12th. I really want you to pay attention to that because we have some early start times and some shorter lunch hours and some longer evenings. And I want to make sure that you get that into your schedule and you look at your committee assignments so that we can stay punctual. I want to thank you for a very efficient morning and have a good lunch hour. Thank you.
Are there any committee announcements? Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet in about 5 minutes in room H18 to hear House Bill 228, Subdivision Family Exceptions, and House Bill 188, Board of Occupational Therapy Amendments.
Chairman Miller.
Your committee number, thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet in at 10 after 12 in room H8 to consider the following bills. Senate File 14 and House Bill 186 will further meet tomorrow. Right now it's scheduled for 8 a.m., but I plan on getting out a notice to come in tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. because we're going to go to the session here at 9 to consider Bills 210, 195, 158. So tomorrow at 7:30 for 210, 195, and 158.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. To consider 4 bills, House Bill 212, Workers' Compensation Claim Appropriation, House Bill 213, County Road Construction, Competitive Bidding, House Bill 233, Branch Bank License Expiration, and House Bill 237, Water and Sewer District Contracts.
Chairman Zwanisser.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet tonight, 10 minutes after adjournment, to hear 4 bills. House Bill 219, Decorated Combat Veterans License Plates. House Bill 220, Wyoming Coal Specialty License Plate. House Bill 197, Emergency Vehicles, Tow Trucks, and Wreckers. And House Bill number 206, Bicycles on Roadways.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room H17 to consider the following bills. House Bill 216, Veterans Skilled Nursing Center. House Bill 240, Physician Assistant School. And if time permits, House Bill 246, Acupuncture Practice Act.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Revenue Committee number 3 will meet tomorrow, Wednesday morning, at 7:30 p.m. rather than 8, because of what the majority floor leader did to the session calendar. We're going to be discussing House Bill 173, finish that one up. We're going to do House Bill 202, EPA requirements, tax exemption. House Bill 116, strategic investments and projects. And House Bill 185, severance tax distributions.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House Committee number 2 will meet upon noon recess to consider bills, House Joint Resolution 11, Non-Economic Damages, Constitutional Amendment, House Bill 225, Highway Patrol Security Duties, House Bill 189, Federal Funds Task Force, and Madam Chair will meet upon adjournment to consider House Bill 91, Restoring Constitutional Governance, House Bill 131, Change in Party Affiliation, and House Bill 133, United Nations Agenda 21, Prohibition on Implementation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Education Committee number 4 will consider tomorrow after adjournment House Bill number 11, the re-referral from appropriations, and House Bill 204, Campus Security Study.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
I'm privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I will be in the minority office. I'm going to shortly, probably between 12:30 and 1, and I will just be in the office if anybody wants to come pay for mugs and pick up mugs.
You have heard the motion that we rise and sit again at 2 o'clock. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Please say no. We will meet again at 2 o'clock. We're adjourned.